जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभा जय गिरिवर धारी जय गिरिवर धारी
this whole platform?
So we are seeing over here, Srila Prabhupada is talking about Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma verse in this purport, quoting the Bhagavad Gita, where Prabhupada is saying that one is, if one comes to the Brahman platform, which is the transcendental bliss platform, then one will not come back. However, Prabhupada also is giving a warning. Prabhupada is saying that if one does not engage in devotional service, then one will definitely come back to this material world. He has that chance of falling down again. And many times in different places, when Prabhupada's disciples would ask him, Prabhupada would say that it becomes very lonely in the Brahman. When somebody attains that self-realization of Brahman, it's good that there is all shanti and peace, but it can become very lonely because soul is part and parcel of Krishna and soul is Satchidananda Vigraha, Satchid and Ananda as well. So he is used to actively being engaged in service. And over there is no activity for the soul and therefore it can get boring. And Prabhupada said that then one can fall down over there. They cannot sustain themselves without any devotional service and active engagement of their senses in Krishna's, for Krishna's pleasure. In fact, Prabhupada would often give examples of people who, he said that when these people, when very elevated personalities achieve the Brahman platform, so Prabhupada often quotes the example of Mother Teresa, that, you know, we see she achieved so much when she was here in this material world, and she, Prabhupada used to say that these great personalities who have come down, they then, you know, try to engage in welfare activities of the others, they open hospitals and all that. But the message is that what Prabhupada is telling us very strongly in the purport is that even at the platform of Brahman, one is not assured that they will not come down. And Prabhupada is establishing the supremacy of bhakti over all other processes. That is what we see Prabhupada doing here and time and again in most of the purports. So Srila Prabhupada saying that yes, this Brahman realization is not enough. Without bhakti, there is chances of fall down. Now Prabhupada is saying, what to speak of material desires? Prabhupada is saying that only when the heart is uncontaminated by lusty desires, then only one can achieve that peace and calm. If their heart is completely agitated by material desires, it's very difficult for them to achieve that peace and calm. And in fact, there is a beautiful verse, a very famous verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Leela, chapter 19, where it says, Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakala Ashanti Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Ata Eva Shanta. So Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakala Ashanti. When somebody is trying for Bhukti, which is sense enjoyment, Mukti, which is liberation. When someone is trying for Siddhis, someone is trying through Ashtanga Yoga to try and achieve, become lighter than the lightest, heavier than the heaviest, floating in the air. So someone is trying for all these Siddhis, or someone is a proper Kami, like, you know, materialist, having lots of Kama. All these things will always give them Ashanti. Their heart is going to be completely restless and agitated. However, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Atta Eva Shanti. A Krishna Bhakta is absolutely desireless. When we say desireless, means desire is only to serve the Lord and the pleasure of the Lord, but they do not have any other desires like Siddhi, Bhukti, Mukti and all that. And therefore, Krishna Bhakta is completely peaceful and calm. Now, there is a beautiful verse in Bhagavad Gita in chapter 14, verse 23 of the Bhagavad Gita. There's a very beautiful verse which actually says, I'll just read it out for you all. It also connects with this particular verse that we are doing today. It says, Sama dukha sama swastha, sama loshtashtama kanchahanaha, tulya priya priya dhiras, tulya nindatma samshrutaha. What does that mean? Prabhupada translates that, One who does not hate illumination, attachment, delusion when they are present, or long for them when they are absent. One who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, and one who regards happiness and distress alike and looks upon everything equally, whether it's a lump of matter or it's actually a treasure of gold, he looks upon everything equally and he considers everybody his friend. Tulya Mitrartha. He considers everyone his friend as well. That such a person is actually situated in true happiness. And we see that ties in with today's verse, what Narad Muni is instructing Yudhishthir Maharaj, that unless one's heart is completely free from material desires, they will not be peaceful and calm. Now we see that in Kali Yuga, it is extremely difficult, this particular thing, to work on first freeing the heart from material desires and then becoming peaceful and calm is very difficult because first of all, we are in the material world. The nature of the material world is it will pull us towards sense enjoyment. That is the work of Maya. On top of that, we are in Kali Yuga. So the, you know, entire 12th canto has so many descriptions of how Kali Yuga, in Kali Yuga, how the mind is so disturbed, the mind is always agitated, people are always fighting, people are always after sense gratification. Like, so many descriptions are there in the 12th canto. And chapter 3 is full of these descriptions over there. Then where is the question of peaceful mind and calm mind? Where will be that question? Already in material world, plus the influence of Kali Yuga on top of us, and Bhagavatam is declaring that everybody will have agitated minds, everybody will always be quarrelsome, they will have short lifespans. So where is that chance of becoming calm, peaceful, which is a prerequisite over here to then achieve that transcendental bliss? So therefore, for practicing devotees, we see, you know, even though we are practicing devotees, it is a big struggle. In this conditioned state of mind, it is a very big struggle for us to actually overcome our material like desires. Everybody has conditioning from their previous lifetimes. It's very difficult to give up that conditioning. Sometimes, you know, many devotees discuss, they might have been fond of, you know, listening to songs before they became a devotee, or they were, you know, playing in an orchestra or some music or something like that, or fond of watching movies or something. And it's very difficult to, even in when we are in devotional life, actively engaged in devotional service, doing services, but we still see that conditioning keeps coming up sometimes. And we have to struggle really hard, like almost swimming against the current, to then get that conditioning and, you know, control the urges of the senses. So we see in Kali Yuga, it's very difficult. And if not gross, some devotees have crossed, for example, that conditioning, that, you know, desire for sense gratification. So they have crossed those desires for gross sense gratification. But then there are subtle things which are always troubling the mind. And subtle things is lust, greed, envy, like Krishna is saying in this 14th chapter, verse 23. He's saying that, you know, people are just getting disturbed by all this. And unless one is equipoised in the face of envy, hate, distress, illumination, light, everything is, you know, when one is completely detached, only then one will be able to experience true joy and happiness. Now, there's a beautiful story of Sukhadeva Goswami visiting Janak Maharaj. So when Sukhadeva Goswami actually goes to visit Janak Maharaj, and, you know, it ties in with what we are discussing. So Janak Maharaj actually wanted to establish how, you know, a devotee is superior to everybody else and a devotional service is superior to everything else. And Janak Maharaj has this particular, he is one of the Mahajans, so he has the particular nature of establishing like tenets of dharma, tenets of bhakti. In fact, when once Ashtavakra was also visiting him, he saw Janak Maharaj was embracing a tree very tightly. And then Janak Maharaj was crying loudly, "Leave me, leave me, leave me." And he said that, you know, you are holding onto the tree and you are saying, "Leave me, leave me, leave me." And there Janak Maharaj was trying to establish that we are actually holding onto Maya very strongly. And then we are saying somehow you are struggling, "Oh, leave me, leave me, leave me." But actually, we are holding on to them. She is not holding on to us. You know, Prabhupada also gives the example that if a devotee is trying to, you know, Maya is there, Tapatreya. She is always standing with that Trishul, trying to give the Tapatreya to all people and to allow, to make them stay in the material world. As soon as someone's trying to escape, someone's taking to bhakti and trying to go out of this material world, she inflicts them with that threefold miseries of the, you know, conditioning of the mind, of the body, and, you know, miseries from other living entities. So she's always trying to give that. But Prabhupada gives the famous example. Like, you know, if you go and visit a doctor and he has a huge dog which is standing over there. So the dog is always barking and people are actually not able to pass through and go and sit in the waiting room of the doctor. But if the doctor from inside says, "Tommy, come and sit down here next to me," then, you know, obviously Tommy will listen to the doctor and he'll sit down and people can then go into the clinic. So Prabhupada always gives that example in terms of Maya. Because obviously Maya Dhyakshina Prakriti, she's under the control of Krishna. And therefore, as soon as Krishna instructs her, when she is trying to give the tapatriya to the to people who are trying to go out, he actually instructs her. You know, like he tells Tommy, he tells Maya, "You please allow this person to come out, they are my devotees." So that is what we see, that, you know, if we are not trying to hold on to, Maya is not holding on, but we are actually holding on to Maya. So this time when Sukadeva Goswami visited Janak Maharaj, he wanted to again establish the supremacy of bhakti. So Sukadeva Goswami has gone there, he's such an elevated personality, but he's just waiting at the gate and no one went to receive him. No one from the kingdom went to receive him. No, there was no attendance also went, and no, not even Janak Maharaj went. And for a few days passed, when he was just waiting there, waiting for, you know, being allowed to go into the kingdom of Janak Maharaj, into the palace. And it is said that there was no change on Sukadeva Goswami's face. No change at all. He was absolutely peaceful and calm. He did not get agitated that someone has not come. I'm such an elevated person. Why is nobody receiving me? At least come and acknowledge that you're standing there. We'll come. Nothing like that. But still there was no change on Sukadeva Goswami's face. And then after a few days, Janak Maharaj himself, along with his whole retinue, all his attendants, all his soldiers, army, everybody, big procession. And then he went, you know, with this big procession to receive Sukadeva Goswami with lot of pomp, lot of show, lot of affection. He brought Sukadeva Goswami inside. And again it is described that there was no change on Sukadeva Goswami's face. Not that, ultimately some people have come to receive me, I'm so relieved and happy now. No change on his face when he was not receiving anything, and no change on his face when he received everything as well. And that is where Janak Maharaj was trying to establish that a person who's situated on that platform, he's unaffected by all these things. And contrast to that, I was listening to a class, and one a person was saying that there was a devotee who was visiting a temple. Now it was a little bit of a small center type of temple. And this devotee was actually quite a senior devotee. And he used to travel sometimes and all that. And he visited that temple and nobody not much knew about this person. So he just sat down with everybody and he was chanting. But ultimately then, you know, somebody realized that, oh, this person is a senior devotee, and they asked him to give the Bhagavatam class for that day. So that devotee gave the Bhagavatam class, but at the end he said that initially nobody recognized me. Nobody even acknowledged or said, at least Hare Krishna, somebody should have said to me like that. So obviously he was expressing correctly. We should acknowledge devotees, especially senior devotees when they come. But in that temple, they weren't much aware, and then they decided, yeah, we need to be careful about guest reception and all that. But the point is that, you know, Sukadeva Goswami is completely unaffected by any glory received or not received. But we see in our conditioned state, we do get affected. And that is what, you know, I was talking about, where some people might have been able to control their gross material desires. However, these subtle desires will always keep troubling. And especially Bhakti Vinod Thakur says, the desire for pratishtha or fame is the last one to go. All other desires we slowly come out of. First, it's a big struggle to come out of gross desires only. But even subtle desires you slowly, you know, subtle desires and anarthas you slowly overcome. But the desire for pratishtha is very, very hard to go. Where we want some recognition. Like we might just say, dadati prati granati. No, but no, in our heart we are actually wanting some recognition and acknowledgement for our own position, probably, as a devotee. So we see this happening. And Srila Prabhupada says, in Maharaj Chitraketu's pastime, Srila Prabhupada says in that section, he says that if you still have a mood of enjoyment, to enjoy either your gross senses or your subtle senses in this material world, And you are doing devotional service. You are doing devotional service also very nicely, but you have this tendency of little bit of enjoyment. You are performing all the activities of devotional service. You are engaging in chanting, you are doing your services nicely, but you, when you are having that particular, you know, still that I am the Lord, I have to enjoy that, you know, master of the senses like that, then Prabhupada says that it is very difficult to go back to Godhead. So such devotees, because Krishna is extremely merciful. In fact, I was hearing Jagatarini Mataji, like they are visiting us soon, but she was saying in a class that if you have desire for even one rasgulla, you have to come back. Because Krishna is merciful, not as a punishment. He says, you want to enjoy rasgulla? Yeah, you go back, I'll make the provision for you to have lots of rasgullas to eat. But we are coming back to enjoy that rasgulla. So in the same way, Srila Prabhupada says in that particular section, he says that for such a devotee, when there is, you know, when there is this inclination for sense enjoyment, they will actually go to the heavenly planets for one birth. And they will exhaust that inclination of sense enjoyment. Once they have exhausted that inclination, only after that they, you know, get a chance to perfect devotional service again and go back. But obviously we know the risk is there. Like, you know, speaking about normal devotees, if you go to the heavenly planets, there is so much sense enjoyment over there. And one can easily get swayed and sucked into that. Then where is the, you know, no, not much distress is there. Obviously there's just birth and death, but not much distress is there. And then nobody might feel like coming back from that platform. So then where is the, that urgency for devotional service will come? In the earthly, that is why it said the earthly planets is the best to do devotional service, because we have a good balance of happiness and distress. Hellish planets, complete distress. Everybody is suffering over there. Heavenly planets, everybody is enjoying. So again, both sides, not much motivation. Like if you're too much in distress, you're just trying to come out of the distress. If you're too much in happiness, you forget about the goal of life. And therefore, this earthly planet is the best, because we have a dose of both. And therefore, you know, when we get some happiness, but again we get distress, and that makes us open to the fact that there is something beyond this duality of happiness and distress, and I need to search for that particular goal of my life. So in fact, Maharaj Chitraketu's own example is there. Like, we know how he was very distressed when his son died. Narad Muni and Angira Muni came and then preached to him. He was given a very beautiful mantra by Narad Muni to chant. In fact, he was given the position of a Vidyadhara after that. And he was given that position to enjoy. It was a byproduct of devotional service that was given to him. But thankfully, Maharaj Chitraketu was a very elevated personality. He, in fact, he had darshan of Lord Sankarshan, personal audience with Lord Sankarshan. So he was a very elevated personality. He did not get swayed away by the benefits of being a Vidyadhara. And we can see that from the example where he was completely fixed in devotional service. He was completely, his focus was always the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we can see that from his conversation with Mother Parvati. We know how he did not mind even getting that particular curse from Mother Parvati. He said, it's fine. And then Lord Shiva speaks that famous verse. He says that whether devotees are in hell or heaven, they don't care. O Parvati, you fail to recognize this particular devotee. So like that, Maharaj, and then he got the birth of the demon, but still he was in full consciousness of the Lord, and he actually went back to Godhead after that particular lifetime. So we see that every time there is, you know, this enjoyment mentality is there, there is some facility which will be given by Krishna for that enjoyment. And Srila Prabhupada says, like, you know, what to speak of material enjoyment, even if you reach the Brahma Bhuta platform, there is still a chance of coming down from that particular platform, because there the sense of enjoyment has probably gone away, but there is no active engagement for the senses, and therefore there is chance of coming down. So actually we see that with bhakti process, with bhakti or devotional service, the process gets reversed. So over here we can see Srila Prabhupada, as he has written in the translation, that only when one's consciousness is uncontaminated by material lusty desires, then one becomes calm and peaceful, then one becomes situated in transcendental bliss, then there is no chance of him returning. So what is the prerequisite or the condition? That we have to, someone has to work hard on first making their heart free of the contamination of lusty desires. But if we see bhakti process is completely reversed, we don't have to work hard You know, through any other yoga processes, we don't have to work hard to make our heart free from any lusty desires. You start the bhakti process and automatically these things will follow. So, you know, all the other processes are pretty long. Like the process, for example, over here to get rid of material desires, they are pretty long and cumbersome processes. Karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, they are very long, long processes, and plus there is no success assured even at the end of this process where you have put on so much efforts to actually overcome these material desires and, you know, get control over your senses and the body and achieve some siddhis and all. But with bhakti yoga, the process is reversed. You are first taking to bhakti, and with the process of bhakti, automatically everything is getting purified from the heart. So we see with, you know, with karma yogis, like Krishna starts the Bhagavad Gita with that particular section. With karma yogis, they have to work hard. Obviously, karma yogis means they want so much of material sense enjoyment, and they have to work hard to then get rid of that material sense enjoyment. And what does Krishna suggest for the karma yogis? He says, yat karosi yad asnasi yad duosi dadati yat yat tapasyasi kaunturya tat kurushvema arma darpanam. He says that whatever you do, you surrender that in unto me. Whatever work you do it as an offering to me. So ultimately, what is Krishna suggesting to a karma yogi as well? Krishna is suggesting that you bring in bhakti, only then there will be success in this particular endeavor of yours. So we see ultimately karma yoga has to result in bhakti for it to become successful, for the result to come of that particular process. Same with jnana yogis. What does Krishna say for the jnana yogis? Krishna says, bahunam janma namante jnana vamam prapadyante. Okay, so he is saying that after thousands of births, a person who is in full knowledge of me will surrender unto me. And Srila Prabhupada explains it in that section. Srila Prabhupada says that the devotee need not wait for thousands of births to achieve that perfection of knowledge. Oh, yeah, yeah, Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Now I have to surrender unto him. For a devotee, that knowledge is automatically revealed through the process of devotional service. In the 10th canto, Krishna says that, you know, for devotees who are engaged in, you know, my loving devotional service, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. So Krishna from within our heart is giving us the intelligence and the knowledge how to achieve him. And you know, in that matter, a very beautiful example which often we have heard of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visiting South India, and that time he sees that Brahman reciting the Bhagavad Gita, but he was not chanting the mantras properly because he was not a very educated Brahman, but he was profusely crying. Looking at just the picture, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes and asks him that, why are you crying so much? Do you know the whole Bhagavad Gita? And he said, I don't know much because I am not a scholar in Sanskrit. I have not studied much. So I don't know too much about this, but my Guru Maharaj instructed me I should read Bhagavad Gita every day. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, then why are you crying? And he said that just looking at how Krishna has become Parthasarthi, he is going to drive Arjuna's chariot, that and how he has become the servant of the servant over here, just you know, with that attitude of serving his devotees, that is making me cry. How merciful my Lord is. So we know how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then embraces that Brahmana and he says, you have realized the most, you know, deepest import of the Bhagavad Gita. So we see like Krishna from, you know, if we are, one is engaged, you know, that verse in Bhakti Shastri exam also, we have, you know, that question that how has your faith gone up in the process of bhakti when you hear this sentence by Krishna? So we see our faith goes up because we get so much hope. Sometimes when we see, you know, all these big, big verses and all that, not everybody has the inclination to read verses, to memorize them, to understand the purports and all. But it gives us hope that you actively engage in devotional service very sincerely, and Krishna will give you the intelligence by which to come to him. Krishna will guide you from within. You need not worry at all. He is there to give you that knowledge. And that is exactly what Prabhupada says when, you know, Krishna says for the jnana yogis, bahunam janma namarte. We don't have to wait for thousands of births. We don't have to wait to, you know, reach that culmination of knowledge. Oh, yeah, yeah, Krishna is supreme. We don't have to do that. Automatically, Krishna himself will guide us towards him. As far as Ashtanga yogis are concerned, what does Krishna say for them? Because Ashtanga yogis try so hard. Very, very, very. It's not even recommended for Kali Yuga now, but very, very, very hard process. They have to really have control over their senses, give up eating, give up drinking, you know, go to the forest and meditate for thousands of years, and then they will get the realization. And what does Krishna say for Ashtanga yogis? In fact, for all yogis, he says, Yoginam api sarvesham, madgatin antaratmana. So Krishna says that, and then he starts the Bhakti Yoga section. The sixth chapter he concludes by saying that particular verse, and then he says that, you know, of all the yogis, one who surrenders to me is said to be completely united with me in love. So we see the seven, then Krishna talks about Bhakti Yoga section. So we see that culmination of even Ashtanga Yoga, Karma Yoga, Gyan Yoga, Krishna is again saying that and stressing that it is Bhakti. So unless these processes result in Bhakti, they come, you know, people who are following this process come to the platform of devotional service, they will not be able to see the success of their endeavors. And that is what we see over here. In fact, there is a beautiful verse in this particular regard where we see that actually people are trying. They are trying so much, like, you know, in the material world, especially in Kali Yuga, we see that there is so much of economic development. We see so much progress, technological progress is there. So people are trying to somehow make themselves happy. And they are searching for happiness externally. We are trying to search for happiness from technology. We are trying to search for happiness probably from relationships. We are trying to search for happiness in different ways. But ultimately all endeavors are completely ruined. In fact, there's a nice pastime about this. There was actually a person who was looking for treasure here and there. Like, you know, he was told by his ancestors that there is some treasure we have kept for you. So he takes out all those old, you know, ancient maps, and he goes looking for the treasure here and there. And in that pursuit of treasure, he's traveled so much, and he dies in the pursuit. Somewhere he has died in some land. And people in his place, in his hometown, come to know. So they go and actually bring him back from that place, wherever he had died. And they said, okay, we'll have to now at least give him a proper burial. He has died so far away from his hometown. So they, you know, in the courtyard of his house, they start digging to give him a proper burial. And when they dig, the treasure is found over there. So, you know, the point is we go looking for this happiness in so many places, but ultimately, like economic development, sense gratification, we think all these things will make us happy. But ultimately the happiness is inside us. The happiness is where, you know, we have a pure, clean heart and we are experiencing the love of Krishna, of, you know, the pleasure we get from serving Lord Krishna, of devotional service. And that is there within us. It was in his courtyard, own house courtyard, but he went looking all over the land for the treasure. So there's a very beautiful verse. It is from the Hitopanishad. It says, Vidya dadati vinayam, vinayad yati patratam, patrava dhanam apnoti, dhanad dharman tata sukham. The meaning is that, so knowledge makes one humble. Vidya vinay, vidya dadati vinayam. So knowledge brings humility in one person. And what happens when, because you realize, you know, the importance of knowledge, the importance of, you know, studying and all that. And what does that humility do? The humility brings worthiness in that particular person. And once worthiness is there, it will create automatically wealth. Because you are already worthy, so it automatically creates wealth and enrichment, and that enrichment leads to the right conduct, to conducting yourself according to dharma, and that will ultimately lead to, last line, it says, dharma tata sukham, and then one will get happiness from having the right conduct and following dharma properly. So we see that there is stress about vidya, that once one gets vidya, because people after economic development, we have, you know, nowadays we have credit cards, not even credit cards, like people don't carry cash because somebody can steal it away, so we have credit cards. But now even more advanced version, everything is on the phone. You can just scan your phone and you can pay for things. So we try to protect our wealth so much because anybody can take it away. Somebody can come and steal it. Even then, you know, right now the biggest problem banks are facing is all these online frauds that happen. That's the biggest problem. Cyber security is one of the biggest thing which banks are, the challenge which banks are actually trying to overcome. So somehow or the other, people are still finding ways to steal your wealth. And therefore it is said, this particular verse means, Vidya Vinaya, Vidya Dadati Vinayam. So you know, you invest rather your time in knowledge, because that will actually give you humility, that will give you worthiness, and that will help you then attain that wealth which you are anyway looking for. So nobody can steal the education that you have had. Nobody can steal that humility. Nobody can steal that worthiness, that capability you have generated by working towards it. So that is why we see over here, we see that everybody is striving, like karma yogis are striving for all this economic development, jnana yogis are striving for, you know, perfection through jnana, and then ashtanga yogis are trying to for perfection through different asanas and, you know, difficult processes of going into the forest and all. But if they are not culminating in bhakti, then it's going to be very hard for all of them to achieve that perfection. So we see that these three processes are very difficult by themselves, but once, you know, the bhakti process is added to it, then they become easier to do. But, so they are dependent on bhakti for their success, whereas bhakti is completely independent. Bhakti is not dependent on karma, bhakti is not dependent on jnana, bhakti is not dependent on yoga, ashtanga yoga. It is not dependent. Completely independent, completely can give you, independent, and it can give you the highest result that we are wanting to achieve. In fact, with bhakti yoga, with all the other processes, like it is said in the translation over here, you have to first control your senses, you have to get rid of the contamination of lusty desires, then there is the promise you will become happy, and then there is the promise that you will be peaceful and calm, and then happiness will come. However, with bhakti yoga, we don't have to separately endeavor at all. Bhakti yoga itself is such a purifying process that it will automatically uproot everything from the heart. Like the famous verse is there in Bhagavatam 6th canto, 1st chapter, 15th verse. Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agham dunvanti karsneya niharam iva bhaskara. So just as the sun dissipates by its, you know, powerful sun rays, it dissipates all the fog and it completely purifies everything in the world. In the same way, the process of bhakti not only, you know, purifies the heart of any, you know, sinful reactions and any unwanted desires, it uproots them completely. Otherwise, you know, with other processes, like Prabhupada says, you know, it is the elephant bathing. Other processes will give relief for some time, but again that particular desire will come back. But bhakti process is completely uprooting everything from the heart. And therefore, our devotee need not struggle externally to then control anything, because bhakti is giving us that benefit automatically. And also in Srimad Bhagavatam, in 1st canto, 2nd chapter. 2nd chapter is really beautiful. Like, you know, when we were studying, Keshava Prabhu said one should memorize the whole 2nd chapter of 1st canto. So there in the 19th verse it is said, Tada rajas tamo bhava kama lobha dayaschaye cheta etir anavidham sthittam sattve prasiddhati. So as soon as bhakti is established in the heart, tata rajas tamo bhava, the effects of lust, desire, hankering, passion, rajas means passion, all these effects automatically disappear from the heart and the devotee becomes completely happy. So we see Bhagavatam is completely assuring us about all the benefits of bhakti, and we need not, like we see in karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, we need not come endeavor separately to get rid of the mode of ignorance, mode of passion from our heart. So, we see that, you know, what to speak of karma, jnana, ashtanga yoga, which actually require bhakti element to become successful. Even Brahman realization requires bhakti to become successful. Otherwise, one has to come down. One has to come down. And that is what Prabhupada is warning us over here. One has to come down, one will fall down if they are not actively engaging in bhakti. So, there also, you know, the supremacy of bhakti is being established. That even though you are completely blissful, and we have Sukadeva Goswami himself, who was Brahman realized, completely blissful. In fact, Sukadeva Goswami, as soon as he was born, he left home. He first of all took assurance. He was not even coming out of the mother's womb. When he got that assurance that, okay, Maya will not affect you, then he came out. As soon as he came out, he left home and went away. And when he was walking away, there were some women who were, you know, taking bath in the river, and they did not even cover themselves. Because they realized this is a self-realized soul passing through. And then his father was going behind him, you know, crying out for him. And when his father went, then Vyasadeva went, then everybody started covering themselves. And he had to ask them that, when my son went, y'all did not do, but when I am passing by, y'all are covering. And they said, no, he's completely self-realized person. And therefore, you know, he's not seeing any difference between male, female. He's not even seeing difference between human and dog or anything like that. So we know that, you know, he's not going to judge us, or he's not going to look at us or anything like that. So we see that, you know, even he was on that platform, but he took to devotional service. He took to, you know, obviously narrating the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. So we see even on the Brahman platform, when actually even the four Kumaras are there as an example. They also, when they smelt the tulsi offered at the lotus feet of Vishnu, then they realized that, you know, the personal form of Vishnu, they got attracted to him and then they did devotional service. So we see that with every process, bhakti has to be added. Even karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga and even Brahman platform, if there is no bhakti, one will actually definitely fall down. And we see that, you know, actually bhukti and mukti, they are always standing as maidservants at the doorstep of bhakti. They are begging to Bhakti Devi, give me some service. To a devotee, they are begging, please give me some service. But the devotee is just keeping them away. In fact, we don't want that bhukti thing to, you know, you please serve me by being away. Don't, you know, trouble my mind with all these, you know, desires for material enjoyment. So devotee is actually keeping them away. Devotee does not have any place for bhukti or mukti in their lives. Devotees are always only looking for how to engage in active devotional service for the Lord. So we'll end the class here. And are there any questions or comments or corrections?
Prabhu, a devotee goes to a heavenly planet by following bhakti. Is there any path to go directly to Vaikuntha, or he has to come down to earth planet?
So yes, like I was saying, from the material world, from the earthly planet, that's the best way to go back. So we practice our bhakti, and especially, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like we are in ISKCON, we are called as Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Vaishnavas, where we are followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very mercifully came down. He is Lord Krishna himself. He very mercifully came down to give us very freely the process of bhakti, and in fact the highest goal of bhakti. He did not see any qualifications, and he came to give us prema, directly love for Lord Krishna, by the simple process of chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So in this lifetime itself, we can actually perfect our lives and straight away go to back to Godhead, or wherever Krishna might want us to go to engage in his service, but we become eligible to go back to Godhead by the following in the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Prabhupada was, you know, saying that particular thing in Maharaj Chitra Hetu section more as a warning that if you have that enjoyment mentality, but you are also a very good devotee, then Krishna will allow you to enjoy and exhaust that particular tendency or proclivity, and then you'll be able to, you know, because that tendency is gone, then you'll be able to focus on your bhakti. But we have the opportunity in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement to actually avail of the, you know, the love of Godhead, that, you know, storehouse of love of Godhead, which he has opened up for us, and take it through this easy process of chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So yes, there is opportunity for us to go straight away back to Godhead, to Vaikuntha from here. So why does Krishna does not appreciate the hard work of the Ashtanga Yogis, but he keeps saying Bhakti Yoga is the best? So there are different processes recommended for different ages. And Ashtanga Yoga is not a process which is followed in this particular age, in the age of Kali especially. So that is, you know, one aspect. Krishna definitely appreciates the Ashtanga Yogis. He actually, you know, talks about that in the Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, he would not even talk about that in the Bhagavad Gita. He recognizes that, yes, they are actually better than, you know, people who are just materialists trying to enjoy their senses and all that. They are actually trying to do something more. So definitely that appreciation is there, because that process has also come from Krishna. Everything has originated from Krishna. So the process has come from him. But it was more valid in another age. Like we see Dhruva Maharaj. He actually did proper Ashtanga Yoga, but it was mixed with bhakti because Narad Muni gave him the mantra and the process by which to see Paramatma. However, so the goal of Ashtanga Yoga is to realize Paramatma, but people get deviated because you get lot of siddhis when you do Ashtanga Yoga properly. Again, in the previous ages, there's lots of siddhis one gets and one actually gets just deviated. For example, if you go with your parents to Sydney in the car and you'll take an exit just to rest for some time, and there over there you'll like things and then you'll start enjoying there, you'll are shopping there, you'll are seeing some sightseeing places there, and you forget your goal that you had to actually go to Sydney. And that is what can happen with the Ashtanga Yoga process, and that is what Krishna is warning. And therefore he says that it should culminate in bhakti, otherwise it will be useless waste of time, especially in Kali Yuga, where you will not even get the result of Ashtanga Yoga because it's not a process over recommended for this age. Hold the mic nicely so everybody can hear you. If somebody does? Who should tell whom? If a devotee does apra, then who should tell him? So if one devotee does not speak properly or does Vaishnava aparadh to another devotee and there's nobody else to correct, the person to whom they did the aparadh should tell him? Yes, so it also depends on your relationship with that particular person who's committing the aparadh. If you have a relationship with them where they will accept what you are saying, the correction that you are giving, then yes, you should say. Otherwise, it is better to approach someone who has a relationship with that devotee, whom they will listen to and whose authority they accept, and then tell them that, you know, this devotee has a tendency to do like this. Better to tell them to, you know, not do this particular aparadh. So it depends on your relationship. But yes, if you have that relationship, then you can actually approach that devotee confidentially and, you know, correct them that, oh, I did not, you know, this particular thing might hurt somebody else. So you have to be careful what you did just now.
Mataji, you had mentioned how even if we have one desire left, how you told Jagatarini Mataji had said, if we even have a desire for one rasgulla, we have to come back and eat. Krishna provides us with that. But we see in this Kali Yuga, we're under the guidance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had said that even if we do 70%, that's okay. 30% we'll still have some pure desires. We can go back, come back to Godhead. So how come it is possible?
Yeah, I don't know if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said that. I've heard Srila Prabhupada has given us that particular. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, you know, Krishna has said, Satatam Kirtayantumam, like all the time. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, during the day they used to have kirtans in Shriva Sangam. But then the devotees were not satisfied and they said, we are wasting the night time in sleeping. So we should also do kirtan at night time. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was saying, day and night actually engage in Sankirtan. But it was Srila Prabhupada who, I don't know the source properly, but I believe Srila Prabhupada had given that particular compromise or that particular concession for devotees. So again, like I was telling that Prabhuji, we are in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. He's obviously, he's, you know, Mahavadanyaya. He's the most merciful incarnation of Lord Krishna. And that too, he has come in this age of Kali where everyone is anyway struggling with their mind and, you know, trying to achieve the goal of life. So, yes, he has made the process very easy for us. And if we are not perfectly doing that process, I hope, even I am hoping that Prabhupada will actually then give us, I've heard so many people say that Prabhupada will then give us entry through the back door, but we should have sincerely been chanting our 16 rounds and we should not offend devotees. That is one big prerequisite which even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says. So if we've done these two very nicely and then, you know, little bit this and that is there, then Prabhupada will actually correct all that and take us through the back door. So even I am hoping that he does that with me.
Thank you, Mataji.
Thank you, Mataji, for the nice class. I heard all your class online and I think that the first part was there was no sound. So if you've covered for this, so I'm sorry. But I just was wondering, because you were talking about the recognition and fame, and I was wondering, like, what is the difference between wanting to be recognized and wanting to be encouraged?
Wanting to be recognized and wanting to be encouraged.
Like, not wanting to be encouraged, like needing encouragement.
So it is always said by devotees that we, in devotional life, it is, you know, good to be honest about what level we are at in Krishna consciousness, and in terms of our progress, our advancement, our realization. It is better to be honest rather than imitate somebody else. So otherwise, you know, it is said we will not be able to, if we try to imitate somebody else who's, let's say, very pure, we will not be able to sustain that purity for long, because we are what we are with our anarthas, our conditioning. We are what we are at this stage in our life. But at least we are in the hospital trying to get treated. So we have hope that I am there for to get treated. But right now I am more sick than the other person who's, you know, got treated much more or faster or, you know, whatever. So it is better to be honest with ourselves and with our heart. And if we have that particular that expectation that, you know, some senior devotee should encourage me when I do some service and all that, it's okay. It's okay. Like, you know, it's okay to have that. But it should not become that if we don't get that encouragement, then it becomes a big problem in our devotional life, and it starts us, you know, making us come. Because then we have that expectation, oh, nobody encouraged me, and we might do some aparad because of that. So that, it should not start becoming a blocker in our devotional life. But if we have that particular need that, you know, I need that appreciation or encouragement when I do some service, and it makes us happy, and that is what is dadati prati granati. However, when I said that in that name of that, we should not start, you know, not then, you know, doing service or doing service only with that particular expectation that people should appreciate me, and we are looking around for that particular appreciation, then it starts becoming a blocker. But as devotees, again, you know, we can take the reverse thing as well. Like, just as we are recognizing, oh, we might want to be encouraged, maybe we can show a lot of encouragement to others. We can actually start giving it out, and automatically it will spread a good positive atmosphere in the devotee community, where everybody is encouraging and appreciating each other. So we can be that change which we want in others for us. So that can also help us. In fact, it always says that condition yourself to receive happiness in giving, not receiving. Because then you will never be disappointed. Because when you are, you know, receiving, you are getting happy because of giving to others, who can stop you from giving? But if your happiness is conditioned to receive from others, then you will be disappointed because they might not give whatever we want. So maybe we can start doing that a lot, encouraging others, and then we'll see, it will come to us as well. But not, it is not good to then suppress that desire artificially. That's what I was saying. Like, we should live according to our purity and what level we have advanced in bhakti. Automatically, one day you might not want that desire at all. It might go, because bhakti is purifying. But right now, if we have that desire, then yes, we acknowledge it.
Thank you very much.
Mataji, if we once desired, stay in the mic. If we desired it once, but now it is gone, so do we still have to have that, you know, come back to have that desire fulfilled, or it's gone then, you know, or we suppressed it and we will not?
So generally we don't, you know, even when we are talking about devotees, we never judge them for their previous lifetime, like previous conditioning or what they were before they have become devotees. We never judge them So similar to that, if we had something in the past, because all of us are on the path of devotional service, going towards, progressing towards, you know, becoming a pure devotee and getting love for Krishna in our heart. So obviously there are many milestones we will keep crossing. And, you know, anartha nivritti is one of the milestones. After that, nishta, ruchi, asakti, all that comes. So then already if you've reached that, but this has completely gone, then you will not get penalized why you had it in the past. But if it sprouts back, like Bharat Maharaj's example, it sprouted back. That even on the Bhava platform, he got that desire to, you know, save that deer. And then, you know, obviously deer. And he went in that consciousness. So if it sprouts back, then it will become a problem. But if we have given it up, then we won't be penalized for the past.
Thank you, Mataji.
Anybody else? Any questions, comments, corrections? Okay, we'll end the class here. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai Nitai Gaur Premanande.
Class was very good, Namatai.
The most effective will be.